And the third is they now recognize, and people were talking about this in Oxford, that publication of new epigraphic work is far better done if a born digital artifact is desired in Epidoc or something like it than as a bunch of records in a database. Because once you start getting into really wanting to describe things with prose, but be able to have structure within the prose, the relational database model gets really and intractable. And so they're now aware of the fact that if they want to continue populating the database systems, which are sort of the idea is the first stop for finding stuff across large bodies of material, they've got to be able to inhale Epidoc and scrape out of it what fits in their scheme. And that dialogue is driving a process that's actually helping us refine what we say about what sort of minimally conformant Epidoc is. If you have stuff encoded in your Epidoc document that fits based on a standard transform into the sort of the intersection set of the main metadata fields across the IGL databases, we're going to call you conformant Epidoc, because that set of fields represents a distillation of sort of minimally acceptable epigraphic practice for a finding aid. It grabs the basic bits of metadata the epigraphists care about. And so if you can get that into your Epidoc document along with a compliant text, then you've got a minimally valid document. So there's a lot of really attractive interchange that's sort of built up in the last, well, I don't know where you draw the line, last year to 4 years of discussions and back and forth on this stuff. So it's an exciting time. I mean, the whole tenor of Epidoc in the context of the Epigraphic Congress in Oxford is completely different than Barcelona the last time around. So that was exciting to see.
So I'm curious, if now I want to get idea of a certain construction or whatever, I want to search what we have available in the electronic form of all Greek inscriptions. How many different databases am I searching? I'm searching the Athanasios inscription website, I'm searching the PHI turned website. How much am I missing? How many different formats am I missing after I've done those?
It is still, the effect for the user is still a very balkanized circumstance. The thing you're missing is the fact that Heidelberg has been pounding more Greek into their database. In fact, I discovered a bunch the other day that wasn't there the last time I looked at my dissertation inscriptions. And there's not yet functional cross-database search. PHI is in its own little functional bubble with respect to the IGL sanctioned databases, and that's still a giant gap, although there are now conversations going on across. Everybody recognizes that this is not a tolerable circumstance, and it's now a matter of trying to work out a mechanism to facilitate true cross-corpus search.
And if I ask whether similar search has similar a search engine similar enough that you can say that the results are compatible. So if I find five in X-Corpus and five in the other, that means the same thing. Or is the retrieval in one so significantly different from the retrieval in another that I really
I don't think anybody studied it in detail. Certainly, the way it works, the way I understand it to work at Heidelberg in Rome, is they keep two copies of every text, one with all the Leiden sigla in it, and one with all the Leiden sigla pulled out. And so if you're doing a string search, it's searching against that second version of the text. So on that level, it's a pretty just basic substring search. It may well be that Epidoc is going to step in and be the common format on which these cross-domain searches is going to be performed. Everybody can export to this base format, then we've got something we can work on with a single set of tools. This is exactly where we're going to benefit a lot from the papyrologists, because the other thing that's going on is the Duke Data Bank is moving to Epioch. And so the tools that are being built and refined to do the conversion from the current state of the Duke texts are being designed and implemented with this other task in mind, so that the necessary parameterization to deal with the different light and flavors and so on is already articulated. All we have to do is finish populating crosswalks and text. So hopefully, the profusion of tools that can do lexical searching and so on and so forth against TEI-ish documents are then repurposable on top of that text base once we get there.
Yeah, it's not really such thing as a profusion of good tools. It's a profusion of some tools.
I'm trying to be inclusive in this description.
Can I make I have a recommendation here that in around page 12 there's this functional argument against the use of databases, that there's a kind of a complex process involved. It's my impression, though, that both sides of the user and developer divide, that this kind of LAMP approach just works, and people don't really care that it takes 14 steps in the computer for it to happen. I wonder if you might make a stronger case by saying that you can have your cake and eat it too. That the what a database offers, an XML database offers also for the purposes of structured text like this. And give an example of ExistDB and try throwing a whole bunch of stuff in and showing people just how cool those text is.
Yeah, I actually had a little project in the works to do some of that with the Aphrodisias and structured text.
I think you can even just say it's the truth that this will be back.
The point there is not to denigrate the relational database in any way, because they're greatly useful tools. The point really is that they are a specific kind of tool, and they're not necessarily the best fit for this kind of thing. One, and two, they are the scale of the relational database is the whole database. So retrieving a particular document out of that database is a complex process. There's not a chunk that you can easily sort of take and throw around the web and distribute over the network. Whereas if you go with the XML route, you have a file that you can just stick out there on your web server, that Google can come along and grab, that anyone else can come along and pick up. One of the beautiful things about the Aphrodisias projects are that you can go and grab all of their data in a zip file. Mm-hmm. And just get it all in one chunk. Or you can grab each individual chunk piece by piece. You cannot do that with Heidelberg data. You cannot do that with PHI, which perhaps not the best advice. So the fact that you've gone through this LAMP process and built a database and put a nice interface in front of it, you are actually locking down the channels into your information by doing that. So that's why I wanted to make that argument. Probably didn't make it well as I should.
No, I think you mean it very well. It's just that I think you can scare people away and seduce them, which is more effective than just. And another two seductions, which I recommend. One is that you can have standard transformations of it. So, CI.CRM is an obvious thing. I just plop this in place, and out comes all this stuff, and your museum will love you.
Yeah.
And then finally, what about non-Leiden representations? Like, Leiden existed before text had color or that sort of thing. So you know, we can explore new virtualizations that don't require these functions. It turns out suits don't find line of convention natural.
No, so that's a very good argument.
Surprisingly enough.
I don't know why, but I thought it was part of the genome.
The reason that that's not front and center in the discourse on Epidoc to date is a rhetorical one.
Yeah.
And it has to do
with the audience.
Right, right. It was actually an item of discussion fairly early, you know, and it arose out of the problem of properly putting subscript docs under things on web pages. I mean, that was actually the thing that drove this into the discourse early on. And the reaction of epigraphists, who in the first instance were the people we were trying to convince to let us try, was vehement.
Yeah.
Rejection. This undermines Leiden. It undermines, you know, one of the core conventions. It introduces the kind of chaos and divergence that we have fought against so long, and, you know, makes it clear that you people are just amateurs.
Yeah.
That whole calculus has now shifted, and I think we can now start to make the argument that for students, because we are moving into a new medium where underlining things means something very specific already, that tweaking that can, either in small amounts or very large amounts, it's a useful thing to undertake. And I think we can now say that without getting blown out of the room. But that's probably why it's so quiet in what we tend to write now, is because we sort of back-burner that issue.
I think there's a few really important things that you mentioned. The transformations, you mentioned the anybody can get the Prometheus data and so on. And I think that's one of the things that we should really, in our rhetoric, place front and center. The, you know, proud to do the mashup, proud to, you know, be the parasite and be parasited upon.
Right.
Right? Have the cross-fertilization. Don't be the island. Don't be the monastic type who builds this, you know, wonderful thing that other people can then, you know, look at behind bars or, you know, after they paid. I mean, I really enjoy parasitizing on Greg's data with the help of, you know, other wizards and trying to think what else we can do with it. And I think that, you know, it enriches those texts, right? And it can bring them in different directions. And you can do that yourself with these XSLT transformations, but you can also have other people take the project in a new direction. And that reflects well on you. The fact that it's open. That is such an important change with anything that went before.
Yeah, there's a librarian blogger named Morgan Dempsey who has a nice tagline: discovery happens elsewhere.
Mm.
And libraries are facing the same kind of issue. When they expose their data, then people can find stuff on Google that leads them back into the library. I'd argue also that preservation happens elsewhere as well. If you free your data, you know, when all your grant funding fails and your web servers all start to tank, you know, your data is already out in the wild. Someone else will